It is Friday, July the 6th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Coming up, another visit to North Korea by the top U.S. diplomat.
The fact that Mr. Pompeo is making his third visit to Pyongyang in less than 100 days does suggest a degree of anxiousness, and this is how North Korea ensnares the U.S.
U.S. Environmental Protection Agency chief resigns.
Long overdue. He is the subject of 19 separate federal investigations of his ethical behavior.
There's been another curious poisoning in Britain, plus a little something from the world of music. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is in Pyongyang. 2 days of talks there with North Korean officials. It's his third visit this year and first since the historic June 12th summit between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un in Singapore. That visit comes amid reports the North is expanding its weapons of mass destruction capability. Mr. Trump this week said good progress has been made toward denuclearization, the president said. The Pompeo visit was preceded by the U.S.-North Korea talks that took place at the truce village of Panmunjom. Soon-Yun Lee, a Tufts University Korea Studies scholar, tells VOA's Victor Beatty, denuclearization means different things to both parties. To the U.S., it applies only to North Korea. To Pyongyang, it applies to both Koreas.
Whereas dismantlement, of course, is much more specific. It relates to North Korea's existing nuclear weapons programs. So the fact that the U.S. indiscriminately says CVI denuclearization, complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization, is a misnomer and misleading and self-defeating. The fact that the U.S. never comes out and says it's the denuclearization of North Korea instead of the Korean Peninsula is also troublesome. The fact that Mr. Pompeo is making his third visit to Pyongyang in less than 100 days does suggest a degree of anxiousness, and this is how North Korea ensnares the U.S. in drawn-out negotiation process by dangling the possibility of giving up nuclear weapons and calling for post-summit summits, another date, another face-to-face meeting with President Trump, as Kim Jong-un is meeting with other world leaders like Vladimir Putin, which he will do in September.
South Koreans, of course, pursuing their own peace track with North Korea, and there is a report they're arguing for a more step-by-step negotiation approach with the North. Would that be more successful?
No, I don't think so, because North Korea has been calling for consistently phased mutual denuclearization, tit for tat, concession for concession, while Kim Jong-un, in my view, has really made no concession substantively. He has, you know, uttered that he would, for now, withhold testing nukes and ballistic missiles, which are outlawed by more than 10 UN Security Council resolutions. He has released 3 U.S. citizens, and he has decommissioned an old, tired underground nuclear testing site. So by creating this mirage, the illusion of concessions, North Korea has already compelled the United States to loosen up on sanctions enforcement and buy time, really, with which to further advance his nuclear and missile program. So the momentum has dramatically shifted in Kim Jong-un's favor over the past few months.
What do you make of reports, and how serious are these reports that North Korea may not only be prepared to hide some portion of its weapons of mass destruction, but also expanding its weapons capability?
That's what North Korea has been doing over the past 25 years, periodically after relentless provocations, re-engage the United States in drawn-out negotiations, lie, use strategic deception to get billions in concessions, and go on advancing their nuclear and missile capabilities.
Tufts University Korea Studies scholar Soon-Yun Lee, speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty, he told him that a little hope out there he has for Secretary of State Pompeo, who will be able to get anything really that they might need from North Korea, which is a full knowledge of the extent of its nuclear weapons and a detailed timetable for its verifiable denuclearization. After his talks in Pyongyang, Mr. Pompeo will brief his Japanese and South Korean counterparts in Tokyo.
Visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Trade rhetoric is spilling into the real world of jobs and consumer goods, the United States imposing tariffs on $34 billion worth of goods from China today, Beijing fighting back with its own $34 billion of tariffs on American goods. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports investors are on edge.
Trade tensions are heating up, stoked in part by U.S. President Donald Trump's tariffs on steel and aluminum imports from U.S. allies such as Canada, Mexico, and the European Union. Trump has also threatened to completely withdraw from the more than two decades-old North American Free Trade Agreement. That is making investors nervous ahead of a July 6 deadline when the U.S. begins imposing $34 billion in tariffs against Chinese-made goods. China has promised to retaliate with equivalent tariffs on U.S. cars and agricultural products, while Canada and the 28-nation European Union have announced their own tariffs on iconic American products from Harley-Davidson motorcycles to Kentucky bourbon. President Trump says America's trading partners have taken advantage of the U.S. for years and says winning a trade war will be easy. But analysts are not so sure.
So far, it doesn't look like the tariffs that have been imposed are doing much damage to the U.S. economy. But if this keeps up, if, for instance, the president proceeds with tariffs on autos that he's talking about, or if the Chinese get very sophisticated and start doing not just imposing tariffs, but harassing U.S. multinationals or allowing their currency to depreciate, this could easily lead to a much worsening of economic conditions, not only in the United States, but around the world.
The retaliatory EU tariffs on American bourbon, motorcycles, and cigarettes prompted threats from Trump to impose additional tariffs on European cars, prompting the European Union to fight back with another $300 billion worth of taxes on American goods. The president argues his tariffs are meant to protect national security, but experts say the bottom line is higher prices for consumers.
If businesses think that the strategies that they have pursued over the last couple of decades as trade barriers and investment barriers have come down, if they think that's reversing, we could see people putting hiring and investment on hold, so it could really have pretty deleterious effects.
On Monday, President Trump warned the World Trade Organization that he would be prepared to do something if he perceives the United States is treated unfairly. Analysts say what that means remains unclear. What is clear is since the U.S. president sparked fears of a global trade war in March, Wall Street has erased all the gains made since the first of the year. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
And still ahead on International Edition, President Trump accepting the resignation of the Environmental Protection Agency chief comes amid a number of scandals and alleged ethics violations. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. It's the politics edition. U.S. President Donald Trump gets to nominate yet another Supreme Court justice, and in doing so, could change the direction of the highest U.S. court for decades to come. We'll talk with our veteran political analysts, John Fortier and Jim Kessler, about that and much more on the politics edition. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Music time in Africa. Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Friday at 0900 and Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 15, 20, and 2200 hours UTC.
This is VOA's International Edition. Scott Pruitt has quit his job as head of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency while facing numerous ethics investigations. AP's Sagar Magani has more.
Even as he tweeted that he accepted Pruitt's resignation, President Trump praised his work at the EPA. But Pruitt's actions outside the agency drew scrutiny. Outsized spending on travel and security, ordering employees to do work for his family, among other things. Even 2 months ago, lawmakers like Democrat Frank Pallone were wondering why Pruitt still had a job.
In any other administration, Republican or Democrat, you would be long gone by now.
That day in April, Pruitt denied any wrongdoing.
Much of what has been targeted towards me and my team has been half-truths or, at best, stories that have been so twisted they do not resemble reality.
And in his resignation letter, Pruitt expressed no regret for any actions, citing unprecedented, unrelenting personal attacks. Sagar Magani, Washington.
And for some perspective on Pruitt's resignation and all that surrounds it, VOA's David Byrd speaks with Keith Gaby, a spokesperson for the Environmental Defense Fund. Here's David Byrd.
This is an announcement that had been rumored to be coming for a while because of the, I guess you could say, the controversy surrounding Scott Pruitt. But now that he's gone, what do you think, what does your organization, first of all, think of him leaving or resigning? And second of all, what do you think that means for environmental policy?
Well, it's long overdue. He is the subject of, I think, 19 separate federal investigations of his ethical behavior, his spending, and other actions in office. It is a record I can't ever remember being achieved by anyone in government. The fact that he lasted this long is pretty stunning. The problem is that his successor for now, the acting administrator, Andrew Wheeler, has the exact same agenda in terms of letting polluters do what they want, relaxing clean air regulations, allowing for more water pollution, limiting review of toxic chemicals. So you have a guy who's probably going to be more careful about the spectacular ethical problems, but he's going to be no less a danger to our environment.
Pruitt oversaw some things that the Trump administration put forth, like the rolling back of the borders of things like Bears Ears and Grand Escalante and other places. But also the man that is his replacement, Mr. Wheeler, is a former coal industry lobbyist. So do you think that there are more people kind of like Scott Pruitt that are just waiting to be appointed or waiting to be confirmed?
You're right. What one of the things Pruitt did was he stacked the agency with lobbyists and people from industry who are going to carry on the same agenda as their former employers. You have somebody running the Chemical Safety Office who came directly from the chemical industry's lobbying arm. And the biggest example is Wheeler himself, who, as you said, was a coal lobbyist. He worked for Murray Energy, one of the most notorious companies in terms of violating health and safety and pollution rules. They sent a wish list to the Trump administration at the beginning when the president was first sworn in, calling for rolling back all sorts of pollution safeguards and cutting EPA almost in half. And that was when Wheeler was paid to represent them. Now they actually have somebody running the agency who's going to carry out that agenda. So it's very disturbing. And Wheeler, because he was a lobbyist and a congressional staffer, he knows how the bureaucratic machinery works, so he's likely to be more careful than Pruitt was in terms of his personal behavior, but he's also likely to know how to pull the levers. And that's really dangerous for Americans who are worried about clean air and clean water and toxic chemicals.
And this controversy around Pruitt and the identity of his replacement, Mr. Wheeler, comes at a time when you're seeing things like the Flint, Michigan lead in the water case, or you're seeing
yep.
things like the pollution of plastics in the ocean mm-hmm. or mercury in wildlife. What can the American people expect as far as Senate confirmation of a successor, first of all, and what does this bode for the November elections as far as, you know, getting confirmation of a new EPA director will affect whether people vote Republican or Democratic?
One of the things that we've learned over time is that voters across the political spectrum, whether they're Democratic or Republican, care about clean air and clean water because it affects their children's health, it affects their children's future. People, you don't have a political party when it comes to getting asthma or cancer or any of these health problems from pollution. So it's very unpopular to attack these programs, and that's one of the reasons I doubt that President Trump is going to be able to get a new EPA administrator confirmed. His policies on the environment are among his least popular. He's not a very popular president, but he's even less popular on environmental issues. And you're going to have members of Congress in close swing districts running away from this record, because not only have you had Pruitt really shamelessly flouting ethical laws, he has done the bidding of industry. And it's just not the kind of thing, particularly swing voters in these suburban districts where a lot of these races are hottest, they won't put up with it. They don't want pollution in the air and the water, regardless of their ideology. And so I think we don't intervene directly in politics, but as an observer, it seems clearly like it's going to be a serious issue in the fall.
Keith, have I left anything out that you think my audience would benefit from knowing?
Well, one of the unfortunate things for the international audience is that the United States has traditionally been a leader in environmental protection. We helped bring together the Paris Climate Agreement. Our scientists are world leading. EPA is one of the top science agencies in the world. And the fact that Pruitt and Wheeler, as the number one and number two at EPA, have backed away from that commitment for the United States to do its part, and the scientific leadership, which the agency used to have, is really something that's going to affect people all around the world. And it's a shame, and we really need Congress and the people to insist the United States regain leadership in this area.
Keith Gaby is a spokesperson for the Environmental Defense Fund, and he was speaking with VOA's David Byrd. Also in the news, British police saying a couple has left critically ill now after the same area where a former Russian spy, Sergei Skripal, and his daughter were poisoned earlier this year after coming into contact with Novichok, which is a Soviet-era designed nerve agent that's believed to be more potent than such better-known toxins as VX and sarin. The former head of the counter-terror group at the British Ministry of Defense, Major General Chip Chapman.
It's very difficult to say how it would be linked unless you know something about the people who've become the casualties. So what they'll be doing is looking into their background to see if there is any reason that they would be linked to the Skripals at all. But that would be highly unlikely, it seems.
Russia has denied any involvement in any of the poisonings in Britain and instead has claimed that the UK itself was the blame for the attacks and an attempt to stoke anti-Russian sentiments. This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
Craft beer making in China is on the rise, coinciding with the country's growing middle class that's becoming more eager to expand its taste for suds. Darren Goa helped to organize Shanghai's 2018 Craft Beer of China exhibition.
Craft beer a couple of years ago was only 0.3%, and now we're just like about 5%.
China has the world's biggest beer market primarily because, Goa says, it has the largest population. In fact, China drinks about a quarter of all the beer in the world. Laurel Liu is the sales director of Beijing-based Jing'e Brewery.
What's interesting now is you get inquiry from like small, very small cities, or maybe even just a small town.
A Craft Beer China exhibition report says the craft beer market is likely to grow 30% a year for the next few years. From VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexio.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. It is time now for a little something from the world of music.
To recall the whole year, all of the faces, all of the places, wonder where they all disappear.
Jimmy Buffett is an American musician, songwriter, author, actor, and businessman. He is best known for his music, which he's often described as drunken Caribbean rock and roll.
All right. Changes in latitude, changes.
Well known for his charity efforts, Buffett, a Gulf Coast native, put on a free concert on the beach in Gulf Shores, Alabama in 2011. The concert was Buffett's response to the BP oil disaster in the Gulf of Mexico. Changes in Latitude, Changes in Attitude was a big hit that day. I could somehow adjust enough. I need some help with these changes in latitude, changes in attitude. Nothing remains quite the same. Buffett's hugely devoted fan base call themselves Parrot Heads, who embrace Jimmy's island escapism lifestyle. And together with his Coral Reefer band, Buffett has recorded many hit songs, including Come Monday, always on his playlist as he tours everywhere, just as he's doing now.
Heading out to San Francisco for the Labor Day weekend show. I got my hush puppies on. I guess I never was meant for glitter rock and roll. And honey, I didn't know that I'd be missing you so. Come Monday, it'll be alright. Come Monday, I'll be holding you tight. I spent four lonely days in the brown early haze, and I just want back by my side. Yes, it's been quite a summer. Rent-a-cars and westbound trains. And now you're off on vacation. Something you tried to explain. And darling, it's I look so. That's the reason I just let you go. Come Monday, it'll be alright. Come Monday, I'll be holding you tight. I spent four lonely days in a brown LA haze, and I just want you back by my side.
Aside from his career in music, Buffett is also a best-selling writer and is involved in two restaurant chains named after two of his best-known songs. He co-developed the Cheeseburger in Paradise restaurant chain and owns the Margaritaville Cafe restaurant chain. Of course, Margaritaville is likely Jimmy Buffett's biggest hit.
Nibbling on sponge cake, watching the sun bake. All of those tourists covered with oil. Strumming my six string on my front porch swing. Smell those shrimp, they're beginning to boil.
Jimmy Buffett has been married twice. He has two daughters and an adopted son. And in 2015, he spoke at the University of Miami's graduation ceremony and received an honorary doctorate in music. Wearing his flip-flops and aviator sunglasses, he told the graduates, in a paraphrase of his song, The Pascagoula Run, that it's time to see the world, time to kiss a girl, and time to cross the wild meridian.
Don't know the reason. Stayed here all season. Nothing to show but this brand new tattoo. But it's a real beauty. A Mexican cutie. How it got here, I haven't a clue.
I'm not sure I could call myself a Parrot Head like all of his other fans, but I do like Jimmy Buffett. Just thought we'd share some of his music with you today. Hey, listen, thanks everyone for joining us here on the Voice of America for International Edition. It's always good to have you around. Up the world, latest music. It's just around the corner. They're standing by in the next booth ready to give you all the latest. Hey, listen, many thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Dave Magnus. I'm Steve Norman. We're all in Washington hoping you have a super Friday. Let's listen to a little more from Jimmy Buffett.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Every year, the United States Department of State issues the Trafficking in Persons Report, or TIP report, which evaluates the anti-trafficking efforts of 187 countries and territories, including the United States. The report places them on one of four tiers, depending on government efforts in prosecuting traffickers, protecting victims, and preventing the crime. The theme of this year's TIP report is Local Solutions to a Global Problem, Supporting Communities in the Fight Against Human Trafficking. That's because local communities feel the impact and consequences of human trafficking most acutely. Their stake in keeping their communities safe, as well as their familiarity with local trafficking trends, make them indispensable to the fight against modern slavery. With an estimated 25 million victims, human trafficking persists globally in defiance of all borders, said Acting Director of the Office to Monitor and Combat Trafficking in Persons, Carrie Johnstone, in a recent blog post. It is important to remember, however, that despite its pernicious global sweep, human trafficking happens in local communities, said Acting Director Johnstone. Traffickers operate with an innate understanding of the political, social, economic, and cultural contours of a local community. They exploit weaknesses in protection and take advantage of the hopes and fears of their victims. Addressing these issues can be difficult from a distance, so national governments should draw on the experience and know-how of local leaders, non-governmental organizations and advocates, and individual community members, all of whom have a sincere stake in seeing the end of human trafficking in the places they call home. By engaging in training law enforcement, religious leaders, teachers, tribal elders, business executives, and communities, we become more vigilant and learn to identify and address vulnerabilities swiftly. Proactive, community-driven measures strengthen our ability to protect our most vulnerable and weaken a criminal's ability to infiltrate, recruit, and exploit, said Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. If we're going to win this fight, national governments must empower local communities to proactively identify human trafficking and develop local solutions to address it.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Here we've got youngsters. Should that decision